let me tell you what we're going to do. I'm gonna take the microphone down here, and I'm going to sit down here, and I'm going to do one more four-step thing. And then I'm going to sit down here, and we can do questions and answers. If you have a question, just let's kind of just line up or something, because so we don't have to walk around all over the place, all right? So one more four-step, and then we're going to do questions and answers, because we're going to be done at 4 o'clock. We have to be out of here. They've got a Valentine's dinner at the church, okay?
Are we invited?
Do you go to this church? Guess not. Linda. Linda McZill. Hi, Linda. What happened to my little piece of paper? Okay, sweetheart. Hold this right here. Oh, yeah. Ah, great. Okay, Linda. Who are we mad at?
Myself.
Okay, I'm going to try. I usually don't do those, but we'll... Okay. Why are you mad?
Because it seems like I'm unable to lose weight. I'm unable to keep to do things that I used to could do years ago. And one of them is losing weight.
Okay. And if you're unable to lose weight, and this is probably good, because this is what happens. And normally I don't do this. Do a myself thing, but one of the things I'd like to say is that what happens a lot of times is we get sober, and you know, we stop drinking and everything, and then we still continue to soothe ourselves with food. And many of us come in here already with weight problems, but we continue to soothe ourselves with food, and it's hard. It's very hard. I know people who are sober a long time, want to quit smoking, can't. So what happens is a lot of us, how about gambling? How about overworking? All of this, I mean, we could go on and on and on about these particular things.
This resentment has gotten so bad toward myself, and because... you know, the number of years I have in this program without drinking, I know not to act upon things, but it has gotten so bad, and I'm got little inklings of it's because of things that have happened to me in my past that I'm afraid of being, because I used to be a size 4 even before I started drinking, and when I was drinking, I didn't have the weight problem, but... It's that fear of, and looking at it is so, it's so painful right now, till sometimes I'm driving, and when I pass by certain places, it's almost like I wanna just.
It's very self-destructive.
Yeah, it can be self-destructive. If I didn't really know that I love life, mm-hmm. Certain areas I can't drive in, because if I get a panic attack there, you know, I don't want to get a panic attack there, because the suggestions are so, you know, I just feel like I'm the beating up on myself because I can't do this that I want to do so bad.
Right. And yeah. When you are dealing with this, I'm going, you know, it affects every single area of your life. Mm-hmm. Now, the thing about it is that when we have these other problems like this is kind of the reason that I'm going to go in a different direction. There is a 12-step program for overweight. There's this Overeaters Anonymous. There are many things that we can do to help. We all know diets don't work. You know, you've got to have a food plan or whatever. But I'm not going to get into the food thing. All I want to say is that there is help. There is help. But the main thing is if you have some inventory work to do about what's going on in the past, please do it. Because it could be stopping you.
You know, I think you're right. The resentments toward my mother, toward other people, I don't have those resentments. And it's taken a long time. The God of my understanding has worked miracles in my immediate family, with my children. I don't have that kind of, I used to have a deep resentments toward those people. And now it's toward me because I want this so bad. I feel it's my time. The drinking has been taken away, the smoking, other things that were really harmful. Now this is, it's like, why?
Mm-hmm. Well, and I don't know, but I know God can help you. I know that He's that big, and He's big enough to do that. Ask. Ask. Don't be afraid to ask. Just ask. And He can help you with this weight. And I know you will be led to where you need to go to help you with this. I just know it.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Tough stuff. Tough stuff. Thank you, Linda. Okay, what I'd like to do now is just do a quick little synopsis. We've done this, we've done the four step. Now we've looked at a lot of resentments, you know, anger, inadequacy, not grateful, expectations of what people, how people should act, all of this stuff, jealousy. I've given a whole bunch of character defects that I gave. So now what we do, we put those in 6 and 7, we make a list, and we're willing that God remove those. We need to identify them. So if you've got character defects, identify them. And one of the things that I do with the women I sponsor is like identify them, and then put the opposite. If you're selfish, be unselfish, and such as that. And because that gives us something to kind of work towards. If we have the opposite. And then ask God to remove them. Ask Him, lift them up. Lift up the character defects. And God will remove them. Do mine come back from time to time? Oh, yeah. Absolutely. And so, but I do get periods of relief. And some of them have been totally lifted. So, and then what we're going to do is we're going to talk about the amends. And I'm not going to go into great detail about the amends, but one of the things we need to do is make a list of the people that we have amends that we need to make. And there will be amends on your sex inventory as well as your resentment inventory. And there'll be people that maybe that you don't have a resentment, you didn't harm them sexually, but you harmed them some other way. And do a harm, and I always just put the harms done and the sex stuff together. And because there are people that I've harmed, and I had those on my list. And then what we do is I try to divide them up in three different categories. The amends I can make right away. The amends that are probably going to take, you know, a while. Financial amends sometimes take a while. And then amends that I can't find the people. And I don't know when I can, you know, to look for them. So what happens is get with the amends. And if you feel like you cannot make an amends, pray till you can. And one of the things that has been my experience is that people we can't find, and if we're really willing to, you know, to make those amends to them, what happens is they end up showing up. Just show up. It's the strangest thing I've ever seen. It just happens that way. They just show up in our lives. But get on with the amends, especially your families. And there's several that I want to talk about. And the one is I want to talk about my dad. And I'm so grateful because I put my parents through so much agony because of my alcoholism. And my dad died in May after I turned one in April. And I'm telling you, don't wait. I am so grateful that I got to make amends to him. I am so grateful. And I'm one of these people that I believe get the steps worked, and then we'll study the book for a lifetime. I'm a total Dr. Bob. You know, if you've read Earl Treat's story, he sold himself short in the big book. He said Dr. Bob did his inventory in an afternoon. It does not take forever to do the steps. Do them. I do steps with people over a weekend. So don't wait. And sometimes people don't stay sober to go through the whole book and read it. Get the steps done. We'll study the book for a lifetime. I'm still in a book study. Love it. But get the steps done. Get the steps done. And believe me, you don't have to do them perfect. We're going to keep doing them. You don't have to do it perfect because we're going to keep doing them. So just get the steps done and get the inventory written and get to the amends. And I'm so grateful I did that because I had some time that I had lived in amends before my dad died because I got sober in Texas and that's the way they believed in doing it. And it's the way Dr. Bob believed in doing it. And is to do the steps. The other thing is one of the things that I do for amends is I write them out on a little 3x5 card. It's the way I was taught to do it and it's the way I do it. You don't have to do it that way. But what happens with me is when I get real nervous and I'm getting ready to go make amends, I'll forget what I was going to say and what I was going to do. So if I have it written out, then I can just read it. And then I can say to them, you know, and ask them if they have anything they need to say to me, and then ask them, what is it I can do to make this right? And for me, most of my amends have been really good. But I have made some amends in sobriety that did not work out the way I wanted them to. And we're talking about that thing of you not being liked. And I've had some people in Alcoholics Anonymous who didn't like me. I know you guys can't believe that, but they didn't like me. And what happened was, is I made amends to this woman in our home group. And I didn't even do what she said I did. But Frank Honeycutt, who was also, well, he was my husband's sponsor, and I loved Frank with all my heart. And I'll never forget it because it was at the International in San Diego, our International AA conference that's in July. And we were in San Diego. And he was at a hospitality room, and I said, I need to talk to you. And he said, step into my office. And we went over and sat in some chairs, and he knew the situation. And she was angry at me. She thought I did something I didn't do. And he said, well, you need to make amends to her. And I said, but how do I make amends to her? I didn't do this. And he says, but she thinks you did. So what I did, I know today, that I make amends even if people think I've harmed them. And all I can do is, you know, if I've harmed you in any way, she's angry at me. And what happened is this woman has not forgiven me. And this has been years. Let me tell you, years. And she has not forgiven me. But the minute I made amends to her, I was free. So what happens is that I wonder if I would have been free if I hadn't have done that, even though I didn't do what she thought. So it's kind of what the book talks, you know, sometimes we make amends whether they're real or fancied. And she assumed that I did something that I didn't do. So I set myself free by talking to her about it. I wish that that was not the case, but she's not, you know, some people are just not going to hear it, okay? And we're going to have to just live with that. But what happens is that I know today that my side of the street is clean. And that's what I try to do, because this was eating me up. Because she was talking about me. And just not too long ago, she's in Southern California. People are so apt to call you and tell you all this stuff. And she said, oh, I saw so-and-so at the store. And she asked me, are you still sponsored by Polly? So, you know, that's been years. How horrible. Years. So what happens is that we make amends. And like that one, I didn't even do anything. But I made amends anyway. And it still worked. Because she thought I harmed her. And the other one were my sons. And that's really painful. And if you're going to get ready to make amends to children, really make amends, and they're old enough, and you get ready to say, do you have anything to say to me, and how can I make it right? You better be prepared for the answer. Because I'm telling you, my sons were 14 and 16 when I got sober. And I'll tell you, they had a lot to say to me that day. They had a lot. And they told me exactly what they were angry, very, very angry. And they weren't into alcoholism as a disease and all this kind of stuff. All they were into is, you've ruined my life. And that's where they were at. And so what happens is that if you do this work, if you do the work, I can promise you, if you're forgiven or not, it'll work. Now, it's miraculous if you're forgiven. And my sons have forgiven me. And believe me, it wasn't that day. It wasn't that day. But it has been a process through the years. And when my son needed to get sober, he knew AA worked because he saw what you did for me. And he knew it worked. So, I mean, just do the work. Get a sponsor. Do the work. And so what we're going to do is we're going to do a question and answer. And I'm going to sit down here. And if you got a question, would you just come on up here and ask me a question, and I'll do my best to answer it, or somebody else in the audience can answer it. So, okay, come on up. Okay. I need you in the mic so he can get it on tape.
My question is, when you're talking to somebody like you were saying, and they think you owe them an amends, and you really didn't do anything, but you make amends anyway, how do you justify that with a rigorous personal honesty?
Well, I don't think there's anything to worry about with the honesty. I just say to what I said to her is, I've harmed you. And for that, I'm really sorry. I am sorry that she thinks I harmed her. I can't make her not think I didn't do it. Yeah, I said, I'm so sorry. And I just said, tell me.
Not for what you did, but for what she felt you did.
Felt I did.
She feels her pain.
Yeah.
Would it be appropriate for you to ask her then, what can I do to make amends to you?
I did. And she said she didn't want to hear it. She said, I don't want to hear it. So, what do you do?
I got one like that.
Yeah.
Hi, I'm Petra. I am working on amends with four of my five brothers and sisters when my mom passed away. I don't know, they seemed like they turned into vicious animals and very, very cruel. And I have sent a card to my youngest brother and have gotten no response. And do I just give up? This has been 10 years. Do I call him? Do I write him a letter? make my amends in a letter.
Well, have you made amends to him?
I sent him the card, and it was a really beautiful card that said, you know, I'm really sorry for the things I've said and done that hurt you. It was a beautiful card. And I said, I really miss you and love you, and I want to talk to you. And nothing. And I'm tempted to just get in my car and go. He doesn't live but 2 hours from me. But what's the next step?
Well, sometimes, this is another one of those things. Sometimes we don't get to have that. We don't get to have that closure. Now, if you want to write him out an amends letter and send it to him, he's made it very clear he doesn't want to talk to you. If he got the card, he's made it clear he doesn't want to talk to you. Now, you may want to try again. Send him another card. Say, I'm still wanting to talk to you. Or make it, send him an amends letter. We can try all kinds of things, and I think it's fine as long as you're not doing him any harm. But if he decides he doesn't want to see you, sometimes we just have to accept that we're just not going to be forgiven and they're not going to talk to us. And those are sad cases, but that happens.
Would it be helpful if in her next card she asked, would you at least confirm or acknowledge that you received it?
See, the thing about it is we're asking for control. And some people just don't want to talk to us. Okay. And the thing about it is not everybody is going to forgive us. We are not nice people. We're just not. And we harm people. And some people will forgive us and we can make amends and some won't. And it's really sad. I mean, my husband has a daughter he hasn't spoken to in 7 years. It's been over and over and over. And there's nothing, but she doesn't get sober, so she doesn't, you know. So it's, what are you going to do? You can't make it happen. Is it painful? Devastating.
My amends were for actions prior to me ever drinking. So they have no idea I'm an AA. They had no idea I'm an alcoholic. So...
Well,
you know, it just had to do with the way I handled their feelings during this horror of my mother dying and the funeral home losing the ashes, you know, and them blaming me for it. And, you know, I mean, it has really nothing to do with AA. They don't even know.
Well, but for whatever reason, AA or not, for whatever reason, they're not wanting to talk to you. And that's the hardest thing. We can't make people forgive us. We just can't. So sometimes we just have to accept that. And I'm sure there's many people in here who have those same situations where people just didn't forgive us. I know I live with a husband who has that. That's pretty precious. It's a daughter. Anybody else? Oh, sorry.
Hey, everybody, I'm Joe.
Hold on, see this thing right here? Push it.
Okay. I got a big mouth anyway. To talk to that lady, in 83, me and my oldest, middle sister had a disagreement. That's back in 83. I have not talked to my older sister or her since then. I have 9 nieces and nephews. I have no idea where they are. It hurts. I've tried to make the amends. They live somewhere in New York, I think. But that's on them. I cleaned my side of the street when I tried to make the amends. I never got an answer either. I have no idea if they even got the card or the letter I sent, but that's on them. They're supposed to be Christians. Christians don't act like that. You know? I have a better family here than I ever had with my real family. I can go to these people and tell them anything, and they understand. I just recently got in touch with my two daughters. You know, it took me 12 years. And I'll tell you how I did it. I was talking at an AA meeting about it. And the next AA meeting, a friend of mine came up and said, "What's your daughter's last name?" That's all we had. The next time he saw me, he had her cell phone number. I never asked how. That's just God working in my life. And the way God works in our lives, I kept calling her, but she never called me back. One Monday, I picked up the phone and it was her. That weekend, I was going down to Hollywood and we got to see each other. Yeah, it makes me cry too. Recently, because of my self-pride, I haven't been picking up the phone to call them. But I will call them tonight. Self-pride has got to go. It hurts. Thanks.
Thank you.
Do I have to push a button?
Yeah, push a button.
I'll be done. I'll make it short. Okay. I'm Beth. I'm an alcoholic.
Oh, that's fine.
December 2nd, we lost our nephew to a tragic car accident. He was 17. His girlfriend was 15 in the car. What I've been working on is trying to build the relationship between me and my higher power. I'm resentful at God for taking him away because I haven't accepted the fact that he's dead. I've been working on 6 and 7, Drop the Rock. I've been doing service work, and I miss me. I miss the relationships that I used to have. And I know where to go, and I know what to do, but I feel like I'm lost. And there's a lot of people who feel this way. They just don't want to talk about it. And I need to talk about it. And being resentful at God and what my mistakes are and the effect of it, it affects every area of my life, everything, everything. And my part is not accepting it, and I'm having a hard time doing that because I'm angry. Mm-hmm. It was our only nephew, my sister's only son, my mother, her only grandson, and we've got 26, 22, 4 years in the program, and we haven't had to drink over it. And it's like, where do you go from here? Where do you go when you've hit the bottom in sobriety?
I would like to suggest to you, on the 1st of March in Cocoa Beach, there's going to be a women's conference. And at that women's conference is a woman who I think has had more tragedy than any woman needs to have in sobriety. And I'm privileged to sponsor this woman. And her name is Donna Halverson. She's going to be at that conference. And she has lost 2 children in sobriety. And you can get past this. Grief is grief. You're going to have to grieve it. You're going to have all these feelings. You're going to have to be angry at God. He knows it. But what happens is you can get through it. And this woman is a wonderful example of Alcoholics Anonymous. And she's lost 2 children. And, you know, it's like 1's too many. 2 is just unbelievable. And I watched her go through that. And I watched people in AA who she sponsored. And when she just couldn't talk to them, and when she was at the bottom, like you're at the bottom, and they would just say, "Well, you just need to get over it." Mm-hmm. And she would call me and I said, "Donna, You're going to grieve for as long as it takes you to grieve. And you're just going to do that. That's all there is to it. And you're not going to get through it 1 minute before you get through it. That's all there is to it. And we don't know why this happened. We don't have the big picture. If we did, you know, but we don't. And yeah, it doesn't seem right. I tell you, I had my fist at God, and it wasn't near that bad when my first grandson was born deaf. I'm like, all of these women, I'm in AA for God's sakes, have all these kids they don't even want. And we want ours, and he's born deaf. That's not right. But you know what? It is right. It is right. You know, but we just have to, you just have to allow yourself to just feel what you feel and don't drink. You'll see it. You'll see it. Sometime you'll see it.
I have a question.
Yes.
I'm not real sure how to word this.
Push that little thing right there.
While talking?
Yeah, while talking.
So, in practicing the solutions, back to the emotional sobriety packet, the solutions to dealing with these things. God, I'm really telling on myself. What I am struggling with is not letting my ego take over, or I'm going to be honest, sometimes I'm like, oh, I'm so much better than that. I don't do that anymore. That person needs to go to Polly's workshop. You know what I mean? And then I'll stop and I'll pray. And I know as an alcoholic, for this alcoholic, those grandiose feelings, but feeling less than at the same time and not worthy, I fight with that. So even in sobriety, even practicing solutions of trying to grow up and be a grown-up in a grown-up's body, I still get feelings of, they should know better. Why don't they? Because I am, you know? So my question is, like, other than prayer, because I'll stop in the moment, I'll say, oh, God, that's my ego. Show me, you know, let your light come out, or let you and not me come out of my mouth or have these thoughts. Is there any other tools that I could use to better love my fellows? Not just in AA, but in general. Like, I have all that stuff, coworker stuff, and I really try to practice the stuff that I learn in your workshop. I'm telling you, I just love that workshop. I've been loving it for years. But I still struggle with, you know, with wanting to say, ah, I'm better than that, and I don't want to have those feelings. You know, I drink over that stuff, so any suggestions would be nice.
Well, one of the things is if you see somebody who's struggling, you might ask them if you can help them. You know, because the thing about it is that it's not going to do me any good to feel superior. But one of the things that I can see people behave a lot of times in ways that I think is so unbecoming. And, you know, just sometimes if you just go up to somebody and say, gosh, this, you look like you might be, you know, a little troubled. Is there anything I can do to help you? You know, you don't have to give up. You don't have to be their therapist or anything like that. But just, you know, just find out. Because the truth is, we're all doing the best we can. We all are doing the best we can. And again, you know, they just don't have the enlightenment to deal with the problem. And there's no judgment. There's absolutely no judgment. I mean, there's nothing, there's no way to judge. It's because everybody's doing the best they can. And my job is to just see how I can help. How can I be of service? What can I do for you? And, you know, there's been times I have gone up to people I have been so agitated at and irritated at, with almost biting my tongue off, and just say, honey, can I help you? Is there anything I can do for you? And it's almost immediate. The whole tone changes. And it's just God working in my life, because I don't want to do that. I don't want to do it. You know, I don't want to behave that way. But I also know I don't like myself when I behave in ways that sometimes I behave in. I don't like myself. And I don't like those feelings anymore. Yes.
Willie, alcoholic.
Come on, Willie. Get up here with this mic.
Thank you.
Push the little thing.
Push the little thing, really.
I don't push the little thing. You know, I had a sponsor who told me once, whenever I had those feelings towards someone, she passed away now, she would make me say, I want you to find something nice about them, and then I want you to go ask them if they would like a cup of coffee, and you will go make it for them. And that was her answer when I was newer, to get me out of those feelings of, why are they being that way? How can they be like that? Don't they know better? And she would say, you go find something, one thing nice about them right now, and then you ask them if you can get them something to drink or a cookie right now. And when she said it, you did it. There was no questioning your sponsor, like I see sometimes now. And I still today do not question my sponsors. Thank you.
Thanks, Willie.
Hello. Hey, I'm Shane, everybody.
Shane.
Yeah, Polly, I'd like to ask you a question. The young people in AA, I've been to a few functions, and down in Melbourne, they're on fire, YPG. And I was, because they're carrying the message, and they'll be carrying this message after we're gone. And I was just wondering if you, what you think of YPG, and do you have anybody, because there seems such a separation from the old-timers to the young people. And it's amazing when I do go to those functions, how much they carry the message to the 15-year-olds and the 14-year-olds that have 10 years sobriety. And I was just wondering what you thought of that, and have you been able to connect with any of the young people in AA that are carrying the message today?
I don't really have any comments on that, except that I love to see anybody have enthusiasm. I can tell you I could probably get on a whole soapbox about some of the stuff I see in AA and I don't like. And a lot of it has to do with, it gets a little scary because I think sometimes we're watering down the program. And I think we need to stick with the principles of Alcoholics Anonymous and know that AA cannot treat everything, and that, you know, we treat alcoholism here. And I have a really, you know, I take a pretty hard line of singleness of purpose. I take a hard line of when I do a workshop. I use AA and Al-Anon approved literature. And when I do something like this, I'll blend those two. I love to see, my son was a young person. I look over here at Lon and my son, and they were young when they got sober. And they ran with a pack of kids, and it was fabulous. And, you know, the good news is that James and Lon are still sober. The bad news is none of those other kids are. But what happens is there are a lot of young people walking around when it wasn't that popular to be young and got this program. So, and I'm all for young people doing, I mean, I'm all for it. I sponsor a woman who's 50 and has more sobriety than me. She got sober at 15. And, I mean, so there you go. I mean, it's just, I'm all for what works as long as we don't lose the essence of this program. And I have a lot of feelings about that because I see a lot of stuff. I go to meetings and I see Hazleton literature mixed up with AA literature, and I see a bunch of stuff and I'm like, oh my God, this has nothing to do with AA. And we have all of this literature. So, yeah, I've got, you know, and if I'm at your group and you're doing that, I probably will walk up to you and say, you know, you might want to take a look at that. That's not AA. And I hope all of us, you know, there's a saying at the airports now, and I don't know if you've seen it, but it says, if you see it, say something about it. So if you see these infractions happening, say something. It's our program. So I'm not going to judge any young people. My God, I've seen young people carry the message. I've seen young people do fabulous things. I mean, there's one right behind you, got sober, the kid. These things happen, and you can stay sober and do the deal. And yeah, young people do need stuff. I mean, it's really hard if you're sponsoring somebody and they're trying to go to school every day. It's tough. You better be armed with some information for them. Find out, because do they have it harder than we have it? I don't know. They just have it different. Mm-hmm. So, I don't know that anybody's got it harder. Alcoholism's alcoholism. I'm just saying it's great when young people can hang out with young people. I think it's great. But I don't think it's great when we cease to do what the program tells us to do. But that can happen in a group of nothing but old timers sitting there with put the plug in the jug and think that's sobriety. So, anyway, thank you. Are you going to come up and say something? Okay, come on, baby. Hi, Jennifer. Quick, he wants it on tape.
Alcoholics that has a big ego with an insecurity complex.
Uh-huh. So you got alcoholism.
Yeah, that's me. And I was wondering if you had any suggestions on how to work on that.
Yeah,
I have a problem accepting myself.
Work the steps.
Yep.
Okay. Any more phrases?
I've done the steps.
Go again. Work the steps. All we have to do is trust God, clean house, and help others. That was what Dr. Bob said, and that's all we have to do.
I just got to say that I am so thrilled that I found out about this program today. I am so happy to be here. It's life-changing, discovering this concept of emotional sobriety. I've never heard that term or thought about that concept. And this is so awesome, and I want to thank you for being here, and I want to thank Christine and everybody else that had, everybody that worked so hard to make this happen. And I hope we can have an encore maybe some other time. And I wanted to ask you if, other than this pamphlet, which is wonderful, if you have published anything specifically on emotional sobriety.
This is it. I am not a published anything. It's on. Anybody can have anything I have.
Can I answer that?
Yes.
Grapevine has two books, Emotional Sobriety and Emotional Sobriety 2. And it's also in CD and coming up in ebooks too, I believe. So check your Grapevine rep or the Grapevine website.
No. Okay. I knew they had a new little book called Emotional Sobriety. So this is not my stuff. It was Bill's stuff. Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay, gang. Thank you.
Is this still working? Nobody leave yet. This is